Browns fans, don't miss A Legacy Unleashed at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, celebrating the greatest and most iconic moments in franchise history. For a limited time, now through April 21st, fans can immerse themselves in the Browns' rich history and get up close and personal with legends like Ozzie Newsome, Josh Cribbs, Bernie Kosar, Eric Metcalf, and many others. A Legacy Unleashed for a limited time at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Get your tickets at profootballhof.com today.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a Thursday edition of the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Dan Lobby with Mary Kay Cabot and Ashley Bastock. And Mary Kay is going to head to the owners' meetings next week already. This really flies along. We're like a month away from the NFL draft. I think it's April 25th is the first day of the draft. So we're not literally. I don't want to say literally because I know there's at least one person out there who might listen who would get mad at me for saying literally. But we are close to literally a month away from the NFL draft. So, Mary Kay, you came up with this idea of, you know, with you going to the owners' meetings. Let's talk through some things that we would ask Kevin, Andrew, and then, of course, Dee and Jimmy, who will all be down there. It's in Florida this year, right?
Yes, it's in Orlando.
Okay, so there we go. Good time zone for pods, so that's always a good thing. It was in, like, Arizona last year, so there we go. All right, so we'll start with Kevin. One question to ask Kevin at the owners' meetings. We'll each throw one out for each person. So, Mary Kay, go ahead. You actually get to ask the question. So.
Yeah, and just to peel back the curtain a little bit, we will have Kevin on Monday morning, very early Monday morning, at like 7:45 or something like that, at a coach's breakfast. So we will surround him at his table and just fire a bunch of questions at him. And it's always kind of a fun exercise because you get to sit there for 45 minutes or so and pretty much everything gets asked. So looking forward to that. And I have a lot of questions that I would like to ask Kevin Stefanski. But for purposes of this pod, I can only ask one. So my question is going to be about the man of the hour, Deshaun Watson. Now, Kevin Stefanski and Ken Dorsey went out to Los Angeles. They had a lovely dinner at Nobu in Los Angeles on the water. And I would like to ask Kevin, basically, how Deshaun is doing and when does he expect him to start actually throwing the football in an organized team setting? I want to know that. I mean, do they really expect that Deshaun is going to be 100% and ready for the season? Again, so many good questions that we could ask Kevin Stefanski, and I know you guys are going to come up with two more of them, but this is really foremost on my mind. What the heck is going on with Deshaun Watson, and what can everybody expect?
I also, when you mentioned that they went to Nobu, I want to know who paid. Who picked up the tab? Was that an expense account thing on the Haslams? Or if it wasn't, like, I almost feel like Deshaun probably should have picked up that check because he's the one that's making the real money of the three of them. But that's not my question. So yeah, this is like the big offseason question. When will we see Deshaun Watson throwing in team settings? You know, Mary Kay, you've been reporting for a while that sometime this month he's going to start throwing. It seems like it's going to happen soon. I guess if it's going to be this month, it has to happen soon. And then, of course, the offseason program starts in the middle of April, and they get on the field sort of towards the end of April, beginning of May. They can kind of get on the field for the first time. So I think to piggyback off that and sort of take this discussion a step farther is, Ashley, at what point would you be concerned if we weren't seeing Deshaun Watson throwing to teammates? So you know, I guess the safe answer from Kevin would be, well, we think he'll be throwing by training camp. Like when we start training camp, he'll be full go, 100% ready to go. Is there a point where you would be concerned if you haven't seen him throwing? Like what is the drop dead date where it's like, oh, I'm a little nervous about this.
Yeah, I think for me, it would be training camp. I think that's the safe answer, but it's also the realistic one because, I mean, we know how this offseason program goes. Like the last time we'll see these guys before training camp, we assume, is mandatory mini camp in mid-June. So that's a few months away. I think if he wasn't throwing by then, I'd be like, okay, maybe they're just being cautious. I wouldn't be sounding alarm bells yet, but I think late July, if we're at the Greenbrier and he's still not throwing, it would be concerning from a number of standpoints. Number one, the fact that he's still not ready and, you know, it's two-ish months later at that point. But it's also the fact like the clock is winding to the season and we need him to get his rhythm going with his pass catchers. It's going to, I think, take a while. We've talked about for him to, quote unquote, be himself again. We don't know how long that'll take. So I think the more reps, the better without overdoing it. So, I mean, if you get into training camp and the season is less than 2 months away at that point from actual football being played, I think then it's a legitimate question of, okay, when is this guy actually going to be ready? But also, when is he going to be effective in an actual game situation?
Mary Kay, how would you feel if we left minicamp and we hadn't seen Deshaun take like some real, like multiple real team reps? Because minicamp is really when they can really do some stuff, at least as far as the offseason program is concerned. If we left minicamp and it was like, yeah, we still haven't really seen Deshaun open it up yet and do what we were hoping he would do, would that make you nervous or would you kind of want to wait till training camp?
You know, I wouldn't be shocked about that because I just keep hearing that they want to take it slow. They want to err on the side of caution. They want to exercise patience and make sure that he's not getting out over his skis too, because these quarterbacks sometimes have a tendency to want to rush themselves. So I think they're going to make sure that they keep him within himself and following the prescribed protocol set forth by his surgeon, Dr. Neil Eletrash, out in Los Angeles. So I'm not going to be shocked or surprised if he doesn't go full go in minicamp. I think they're trying to, once again, end that a little early and start training camp a little early to get over on the other side of it and get some extra time at the beginning of training camp. So I don't think that that is going to shock me. But one of the things that I think is going to be a factor is there's a new sheriff in town. And he is a dynamic, overwhelming presence, and that is Jameis Winston. And I almost think that he's so larger than life in some ways that he's going to be taking over a little bit. And Deshaun's just going to have to make sure that he stands his ground and make sure that, I mean, not that they're going to be in competition with each other. We heard yesterday ad nauseum how they're going to be friends, they're going to get along, all of that. And Jameis is truly here to help Deshaun. But there's also going to be a vibe of, hey, this is kind of fun and this is going really well and he's a leader and we're going to listen to him. And so I think there's going to be a little bit of that dynamic as well.
All right, Ashley, what would your question for Kevin be?
Yeah, I think that transitions nicely into the other question I was thinking about, which is just, I'd want to ask him about the backup quarterback situation and how everything ended up playing out there. And I know I'm sure Andrew's going to get questions about that too. So we'll save our questions for him. But for Kevin, it's, I think, just about, hey, the typical Joe Flacco's not back. Give your standard, you know, what he meant during that time last year. But then Jameis Winston, how he envisions him fitting into that room. I think, hey, what do you envision the rep situation looking like here in the offseason program initially for Jameis? So I think that is the other big quarterback topic for me outside of Deshaun's recovery.
Yeah, and I think that's something fans would want to know too, Mary Kay, is, you know, how did you land on Jameis? Why Jameis over Joe? All of that stuff. Just get a clearer explanation of that and really hear it from Kevin's side of things, because it's a very... Obviously, it's Andrew that makes the personnel decisions, but I have to imagine you can't make a quarterback decision like that without talking it through with Kevin and Ken, like the guys that are going to have to coach him and maybe turn to him if Deshaun gets hurt or isn't able to go at the beginning of the year, whatever it might be. So I would be curious to kind of hear, and I don't know how much they would actually admit or say, but I would be curious to hear Kevin's kind of side of all of this.
Yeah, unless, of course, you're conducting a training camp press conference and talking about how your backup quarterback is Joshua Dobbs, and then you walk into the building only to find out that he has been traded and your actual backup quarterback now is your fifth-round pick, Dorian Thompson-Robinson. But just kidding, that was a unique situation. I'm sure that Kevin had plenty to do with Jameis being here. I'm sure he was 100% on board, and I'm sure they have a pretty good plan for how this is going to go. Let's remember, this is a very, very organized football coach. They know exactly what they're going to be doing, depending on what the league gives them or doesn't give them. They have the schedule pretty well mapped out for the whole season. I mean, by this time last year, they knew that they were going to be spending, or at least close to this time last year, they had to wait for the schedule to come out. They knew they were going to be spending a week out in LA. They knew that they were going to the Greenbrier. They know that they're going to be practicing against the Minnesota Vikings in joint practices. So he knows how this is going to look. He knows exactly how this is going to look. And I think the key is that those backup quarterbacks, and there are three of them right now, and that is Jameis Winston, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, and Tyler Huntley, they're going to be taking plenty of reps in these offseason workouts. They're going to take the wear and tear off of Deshaun's arm and give him a chance to really come back at the right pace and not rush him, and understand that it's the season that matters. It's the postseason that really matters, not the June minicamp. So I think you're going to see a lot of Jameis. I think it's going to give him a chance to get acclimated to this football team. He's got to get his timing down with these receivers. Now, it didn't take Joe Flacco very long to do that, as we all saw. But sometimes it does take a little time to assimilate a system or for coaches to figure out how they're going to use someone. So I do think that whole Jameis piece is going to be very key.
All right. My question for Kevin would be, how exactly do you plan to use Mike Vrabel? So we know he's going to be in the build. Well, not going to be like in the building, you know, like every day. But we know he's going to be around. He's going to be available. I've said this before. I don't know for how long, because I'm sure he's going to be a hot coaching candidate whenever those openings start to pop up. But just how do you plan to use Mike Vrabel, and why exactly did, you know, why is he here? What is his role going to be? How often are you going to call him up? Are you going to watch film with him? Are you going to bounce ideas off of him? Are you going to, you know, let him talk to the team someday, something like that. Maybe it's all of the above, but I would just be curious how Kevin plans to lean on and use that resource of a guy that I know we all think is a really good coach, and a guy who is, you know, he sort of mixes the football guy and super smart analytics guy all into one package. And I'm just curious how Kevin plans to use that and how he plans to deploy that resource and how often he's going to use that resource. So I think that would be my question for Kevin, Mary Kay.
Yeah, this was one of the questions on my list as well. It's a very good one. And he will get asked this on Monday at the owners' meetings, at the coaches' breakfast. And I do think it's very interesting. I want to know, how did they even get to know each other? Because we always hear Kevin talk about his mentors and his friends, and we pretty much know who those guys are. And somehow the Mike Vrabel thing eluded me when it came to Kevin Stefanski and coaching friends. I just didn't realize that these guys had a relationship like this. And maybe they didn't have as much of one as it seems like they did now that he's here. But I want to know, how did this all kind of go down? And yes, how is he going to rely on him? How is he going to utilize him? I think it's really cool that he's here. Anytime you have a chance to have a Mike Vrabel in your building, you jump on it. So yeah, very anxious to see what this is all about. And then also, I know that Andrew Berry is going to rely on him for some personnel decisions. So he will have a significant role, and it will evolve. That's the other thing. I think they don't really have it well defined yet. I think he's going to venture into it and they will all let it evolve and take shape as time goes on.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what the like, so Vrabel's not like one of the young offensive guys in the league, right? We know Kevin has a lot of connections there. Mm-hmm. He comes from the Belichick tree, sort of. So, you know, he's a defensive head coach, hasn't been in the same division as Kevin. So it's not like they play each other twice a year. It's just, I do wonder sort of how they, I almost feel like they're both, you know, we know Mike Vrabel is like a guy's guy. And I feel like Kevin's got a little bit of that. And I know fans maybe don't see that side of Kevin, but I think Kevin's got a little bit of that in him too. So I don't know, maybe it was just at some owners meetings drinking Bud Lights next to each other or something. But I mean, Ashley, I am fascinated by this, and I loved the idea of bringing him in. He's not doing anything else, so why not bring him in and use him? I'm just fascinated by how Kevin might lean on him.
I'm just picturing, after you said that, Mike Vrabel running the Mojo Dojo Casa House from Barbie that Ken invented in that movie. But I also think it's interesting, too, like when we talk about that relationship developing, obviously the one guy everyone knew he had a really great relationship that was already in this building was Jim Schwartz, right? Like, he hired Jim Schwartz for a similar role when Jim left Philadelphia and stepped away from being a DC because of his health issues. So we do know that relationship is pre-established. I definitely would be interested to hear if Jim had kind of a role in developing this friendship between Mike Vrabel and Kevin Stefanski more. But yeah, I mean, I also think this is a question for Andrew too. Like Mary Kay alluded to, Mike Vrabel's good at evaluating players and evaluating talent. So how will they use him there? I'm also really curious about.
It's probably some weird like recruiting connection or something. Maybe Mike was recruiting in like Philadelphia. I don't know. Who knows how these two guys got together? But hey, we're all better for it, because maybe we'll get to see Mike Vrabel out at the Greenbrier or something.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay, let's pivot now to questions for Andrew Barry. Mary Kay, what do you have for Andrew?
Well, the Andrew question that I have is the same question that we asked Kevin, but I think it's important to ask it of Andrew, and that is, where did Jameis Winston come from? These guys were 100% poised to sign Joe Flacco in the event that Jacoby Brissett signed with the Patriots. That was supposed to be the next thing that happened. Okay, you didn't get Jacoby, now you're going to sign Joe. And then all of a sudden, before you knew it, Jameis was in the mix. And not only was he in the mix, he was at the head of the class, and he's a Cleveland Brown. And I'm very curious to see where this came from, and did they have it on their radar, but they were just really doing a great job of hiding it, or did it come out of nowhere a little bit? So very anxious to see how that all went.
It did kind of blindside everyone, I think, to mm-hmm. an extent. And Jameis had mentioned that, you know, it kind of goes back to the combine a little bit. Well, that feels a little sketchy. Whatever. We're not going to touch that. Went back to the combine with his agent a little bit. Yeah, I don't know. I just wonder if this is one of those weird things where Andrew's always kind of had his eye on Jameis and realized he could get him, like we've talked about with so many other guys. It came out of nowhere, but here we are, Ashley.
Yeah, I mean, it is really interesting. And yes, from Andrew 100%, I think this is the question to ask him about how this all transpired. Because it was, I mean, Dan, I think back to your, you know, one free agent from each team that the Browns could target. And I mean, you had Jameis Winston on your list for that division. And your first sentence was, let's get weird. So you ended up being right on the money. But it wasn't as wacky of an idea as it seemed like a month ago or whenever you wrote that. So it is fascinating. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe Jameis Winston isn't a guy that Andrew Berry had his eyes on for a long time, but maybe ever since Deshaun Watson has been here, like maybe it's been that long and thinking like, huh, these are guys with maybe compatible styles. And if he leaves New Orleans, maybe we should try to get him. Like, maybe it was something like that. So I'd be curious also to know that history for sure, if there was one with them, you know, liking his style on the field.
By the way, as we've been talking, I've been digging into Mike Vrabel's recruiting history. I don't know how these college football writers do this. This is some intense stuff. But I'm going to find a connection here somewhere. That's my goal. I guess I got to come up with a question for Andrew, which I don't have. So, Ashley, you get to go next.
All right, that's great. I mean, I think this is a question that we asked Andrew at the Combine, and I know it's one he probably won't give an answer to, but it's something that has to be asked, and it's, what is the latest with Nick Chubb? Because we know they haven't restructured that contract yet. We know that they didn't have to get, you know, under the cap before the new league year started, but it's still going to be coming most likely. Something is going to happen with that deal, and we know he said he wants him here, but I'm just very curious to hear what non-answer Andrew Berry will have to give about Nick Chubb's future.
It does feel like this wave of restructures that we were expecting hasn't quite hit yet. And Nick was one, Deshaun was one. Now, they restructured Judy as soon as they acquired him, and then they extended him. And there's, you know, they restructured Jed. But we haven't seen that big wave, and I still think it's coming. Like, I still think we're going to see these, Mary Kay, and I think maybe it might be a little more strategic to, again, push money into the season and then, of course, roll that over into next year as they kind of manage this cap, not just this year, but for the next 3, 4, however many years. We know they think down the road with the cap. So at some point, this stuff is going to start to happen again, and I think this wave of restructures that we've been talking about is coming, but I am a little surprised, especially with Nick, that we haven't seen anything yet.
Well, there was Denzel. They restructured Denzel.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about Denzel.
They restructured Jed. And then I think there was one more, which I'm forgetting which one it was now.
There was Judy after they acquired him. But was there another one before that?
I think there may have been.
Okay.
But it's eluding me right now. But I still do think they will do. We know that they're going to redo Nick's contract. They can still redo Amari's. That wasn't it. They didn't redo Amari yet, right? No. And then they can still redo Deshaun, but they can redo Deshaun later. So I don't think that's one that they know they always have at their disposal when they need it. But I remember writing that they had cleared like $30 million in cap space. So I think there's another one floating out there that we are forgetting right now. And maybe it was the Judy redo. I don't know. Maybe that was it. That was it. As far as Nick is concerned, yes, that's a great question that we have to ask Andrew Berry about. And what we've seen them do in this free agency cycle is add 2 more running backs. And I think that's significant. They've added Dante Foreman and they added Nyheim Hines. And I think that more so than just getting some camp legs and some camp bodies, I think they know, and I've written numerous times, that Nick is not going to be running around and running the football in the offseason program. That's not happening. So he's going to start doing something probably in training camp. And we're not even 100% sure about that yet. So it's definitely a big question. And nobody knows the answer to this yet. A lot is riding on it. I mean, it's Nick Chubb. So it's a great question. And it will definitely be asked. And I don't even know if they can completely answer it right now. He's probably on a schedule himself. And he's on track to play this season. That's what they've been telling us since the second surgery. But nobody ever said he's on track to start the opener. So it's all still hanging in the balance.
Yeah, and I wrote the Foreman signing yesterday. And as part of that, I went back and, you know, linked back to the Chubb surgery stories. And I was just reminded he had his second surgery in November. So he could be back by the opener. You know, I mean, we saw Taki Taki come back from a torn ACL in December, and he was ready for the opener. So we've seen quick turnarounds like that, but still sometimes with running backs, it takes a little bit of time. It just, you know, it varies player to player. Like Breece Hall kind of hit the ground running this year. And I don't remember how early his was in the season. I feel like it was pretty early in the year when he tore his. He came back and was pretty good last year. You know, I know Saquon Barkley took like a year to kind of start to look like himself again. So you just never know how a guy is going to come back from that. So even if he is on the field week one, is he going to be Nick Chubb or is he going to be like a shell of Nick Chubb?
The other thing to remember about this is that this is not your typical ACL recovery where nowadays you can come back from an ACL in 9 months. Not only is this not just an ACL, this is also a torn MCL that he had repaired before that. It's also a torn medial capsule. And all of this is a revision of a previous horrible knee injury in that same knee. So I've been saying this to, you know, on the radio and different places. Nobody will ever bet against Nick Chubb, and nobody should bet against Nick Chubb because nobody believed that he would be able to come back from that initial injury at Georgia and be the player that he used to be. And lo and behold, Batman came storming back and he became a four-time Pro Bowler and one of the best running backs in the NFL. And so nobody should bet against him, but this is certainly not going to be an easy comeback. And I think everybody needs to give him the grace and the time and the patience and the respect that he deserves.
Yeah. That the ACL was his second surgery. It wasn't the first one he had. You're right. I mean, there was a lot of repairing that went on in that knee over the course of a month or so. So we'll see. Okay. So my question for Andrew, I'm going to go a little bit of a different direction here because I think we've been throwing out like questions that you can get answers to. And maybe this is a different pod. You know, sometimes I like to play the game. Like, what would you ask someone if they 100% had to give you an honest answer? Like you gave them truth serum or whatever it was. And with Andrew, the question that he wouldn't answer, but I'd just be curious about is, what is plan B at quarterback? If we get to the end of this season and we're still asking a lot of the same questions about Deshaun Watson. And I'm sure they don't want to think about that. I don't think any Browns fans want to think about that. I don't think we want to think about that. But I would just want to know, like, what's your plan B? Is it what the Broncos did with Russell Wilson? Is it we're going to run it back because we still believe in the guy? That's something that I would want to know that I don't think Andrew would ever entertain until we actually get to that point. But again, Ashley, like this is an entirely different podcast, a bunch of questions like this, like, hey, you have to answer this question honestly. But I would be curious to know, because we know there has to be one somewhere in that building locked away in a filing cabinet just in case, even though they would never admit it. What's plan B if this year doesn't go the way they want it to go with Deshaun?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be really curious to hear what that plan is, but I mean, you're 100% right. He will not come close to answering that without some kind of truth serum, I don't think. But I mean, now is the time, like realistically, I think, to be thinking about that, even if you're them, right? It's like when they talk about when they traded for Deshaun, right? They started doing their due diligence on Deshaun months before that trade happened, right? They were thinking about it before the, you know, trade competition in earnest truly began, because that's what you have to do, right? At that time, he was still facing the possibility of criminal charges, because we know the teams didn't start making their visits down to Houston to talk to him and figured out what it was going to take to get him on their team until after that had passed. And it was clear, okay, he's not going to be charged for any crimes, and just the civil suits were left hanging out there. So this is what you have to do. You have to always, I think, have that plan B in your pocket, especially at quarterback, because it is the most important position, arguably. So it's tough because I know we'll never get that answer. But yeah, I'd be really curious for what that answer is. I mean, maybe the honest answer is we don't know. And I think that's definitely a problem at this point. You have to have that contingency plan if you don't.
Well, and I don't believe that. I don't believe that would be the honest answer. And that doesn't mean that they don't believe in Deshaun. Like, having a plan B doesn't mean that you don't believe in the guy. This is just, if you're good at this job, you have a plan B for everything. And, you know, I'm sure they have a plan B if Myles Garrett were to get hurt or something. Like, you always have some sort of backup plan. And so I'm sure they've at least talked through it, or, you know, gone through the thought exercise of what if. And it doesn't mean that this isn't still a 10-year plan, like Andrew told us at the end of the season. But I would just want to know. I would just want to know what they were thinking in those regards when him and Paul and the personnel group sit down and just go through these weird thought exercises. I'd love to be a fly on the wall for those, Mary Kay.
And some of those plan Bs don't rear their heads until you're in the moment. This offseason, the Steelers got their hands on Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, right? If you would have asked them, you know, whatever, 6 months ago, what their plan B was at quarterback, it probably wasn't going to be Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. So sometimes those opportunities present themselves when you need them in the moment, just like maybe Jameis Winston did as their backup quarterback. So there's always going to be some kind of a plan B. It might not be ideal. It might not be perfect, but most teams, or at least a lot of teams, are able to come up with some way to get the quarterback position accomplished at a pretty high level. So it will be very interesting to see what that plan is going to be in the event they need to go to it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
One more here. D and Jimmy Haslam. There's a couple big obvious ones sitting out here. So, Mary Kay, why don't you lead us off? And Jimmy.
You know what? If you guys want to go first, I would be totally cool with that. So,
Ashley, do you want to lead us off? I could lead us. You know what? I'll go first.
Yeah.
I'll go.
Okay,
you know what? I'll get the tough one. I'll just get I'll get the tough one out of the way. And this is something they're going to have to answer, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about bringing in Jameis Winston into the same quarterback room with Deshaun Watson, considering how your fan base felt, a good chunk of your fan base, about signing Deshaun Watson, trading for Deshaun Watson? Why do you feel comfortable bringing Jameis in with his background? I think is one of the big questions that's going to be out there for them to answer.
Absolutely, 100%. That will definitely be something that they're going to have to answer to. And you know that they knew they were going to get this kind of pushback and these kinds of questions. And they were prepared for them, and they knew that it wasn't going to be anywhere near what they went through with Deshaun. And I'm sure they probably figured if they could weather that storm, then they can certainly weather this one. I think they probably will also tell us what we heard for ourselves yesterday, and that Jameis Winston is by all accounts a very changed man, and that he's transformed his life. That's what it seems like that from the outside looking in and from talking to people and reading about it, it seems like he has changed. And so I'm sure that they have a comfort level with that, but they do have to answer to that. And it's a great question.
Yeah. And, you know, hopefully I don't think they particularly handled things well when we talked to them after the Deshaun suspension. And when we talked to him on a Zoom after they first acquired him, it was just weird. So I don't know that they necessarily handled explaining all of that well in that situation. I do think this will be easier because, again, a lot of that is very far in the past. Of course, the Florida State stuff, you're talking almost a decade ago at this point. I think some people at least have probably changed their views of Jameis over the years. So I think this is an easier thing to navigate, but it is still something they have to navigate because you have an already angry fan base who is going to see this as sort of another slap in the face. And they're doing this at a time, by the way, which is another question we're going to get to, where they're going to ask for money for a stadium and other things like that. So this is a very difficult question, I still think, to navigate, Ashley.
You know, I said this when they first brought Jameis Winston here. It's like, even if, by all accounts, like Mary Kay said, Jameis has, you know, become a changed person, quote unquote, or put this behind him, it was going to get relitigated because of the quarterback room he enters. I think that is the crux of this. Like, it is just a different scenario than if he had gone to any other team in the league. Like, if he left New Orleans, whatever, he was done there. If he signed with the Steelers, right? It would have been brought up, I'm sure, because he's new to that city. But here, it's going to get brought up more than anywhere else because Deshaun has served his own suspension for sexual misconduct allegations. So 100%, I think it's questions that need to be asked. I'm with you, Dan, in the sense that I think it's an easier situation for them to answer questions about because it is in the past. And he has already served a suspension for this way back in 2018. So it's not like anything imminent is coming disciplinary for Deshaun Watson. It's not like he's the starter, but these are 100% still questions that have to be asked.
Okay, Ashley, why don't you take our next one?
Well, I guess this is the broadest possible way to ask this, but the next big topic with them is the stadium and what's going on. Renovation, new stadium, but there's a lot to get into that. I mean, especially with this, you know, possible or Brook Park land purchase, of course. And what's the deal with the stadium as it currently stands on the lakefront?
Yeah, and I just wonder how they're gonna go at this question. This is gonna be very strategic by them. And you know, they've been pretty adamant about renovating the current facility, but then of course there's other things that have happened that make you wonder if maybe the stadium could end up in a different place. I think everyone kind of understands, whether you like the idea of a roof or not, you understand the economics of having an enclosed stadium and how that's beneficial. So Mary Kay, I am curious. This is going to be their opportunity to kind of lobby their next shot at the city and kind of say, I should say volley their next shot at the city. This is, you know, kind of say, hey, this is where we're at. You know, we're trying to get this done, but it's getting held up here and here and here. So this is sort of the next step in the war of words between the football team and the city and the county.
Yeah, and they always address it at these owners' meetings. It always comes up, or at least it has, for the past couple of years. And it's certainly going to be at the forefront of these meetings when we sit down with Jimmy and Dee Haslam, because of the statement that they recently put out about the fact that they are exploring their options, even though we know they have been in heavy talks with the city, the county, and the state about renovating the existing stadium, they have recently said that they will explore their options. And that supposedly includes a dome. So we need to find all of this out. We need to figure out what is rhetoric, what is real. It's going to be tricky to navigate. And the other tricky part about it is they're supposed to talk to us on Monday, sort of late afternoon. And then we're also expected to go to, and this, it's going to sound funny the way this is going to come out, we're supposed to go to a party at 7 o'clock on Monday night. And it's not just any old party. Again, it's once again, peeling back the curtain a little bit is the fact that once a year, media members are invited to hobnob with owners and GMs and coaches in a social setting. And it is this lovely party at the owners' meetings. And it's something that it's a can't miss. I mean, you just have to be there. It's an opportunity to talk to all of the former Cleveland Browns coaches that are now coaching everywhere else in the NFL. It's a chance to talk to some other GMs and owners and get to know people and just to, you know, to network. It's just an important event. And so it's going to be interesting to see what we're going to be able to pull off from this late interview and then trying to get to the party. So rich people problems, right? No, I'm just kidding. I'm certainly not a rich person, but
the problem is the rich people don't understand the issues of deadlines and turning around posts and, you know, give us a little window of time there to get stuff done.
Exactly. Peasant problems is what it really is. So anyways, that should be interesting, but that's just a little glimpse into what it's like. And just so you know, there's usually some, you know, little filet mignon sandwiches and shrimp, and it's a pretty festive occasion. And there's coaches, kids running around everywhere. There's a band playing. There's ice sculptures. Everyone's dressed to the nines. I'm usually in exactly what I wore to the Jimmy and Dee interview because I didn't have time to change, you know, carrying around my work bag and not looking like I belong whatsoever.
That's probably part of why I can't go, is because I just show up in like a hoodie and like
I always have good intentions of changing. And sometimes I've been able to, but a lot of times it's just okay, ripped jeans, let's go.
can I just say, and again, I fully acknowledge why, if you're gonna spend billions of dollars, you're gonna put a roof or a retractable roof or a dome on a stadium. But I think there's a part of me that's a little sad that, like, you know, Chicago is apparently, you know, they're going to build this big domed stadium in Chicago. And we know Detroit has theirs closed. Cleveland, if they build one, really should. I mean, it really should have a dome so that it's useful year round. We're running out of these kind of cold weather, football weather places, though, all of a sudden. So I'm a little sad about that, if I'm being honest. But I get it. I understand it. It's just sort of old man yells a cloud a little bit. But I will miss... outside of, like, I mean, what are we going to have left? Green Bay, Buffalo. We're just running out of the places where we can have some really great snow games if we're putting roofs everywhere.
I know. We'll have to relive those memories with John Facenda. But it's easy for us to say we're inside the press box, right?
I don't know
how fans do it. I mean, there are fans. I'm telling you right now, I've said this before on this podcast, I will say it again, and I'm probably going to walk up to Roger Goodell at the party and tell him that I feel like this. And that is that they need to have a cutoff point. When it gets to be zero, that's it. No more football games. You cannot have players or fans out there risking fingers and toes and limbs. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree. And, like, you know, listeners know I'm a runner and I'll run in any weather. Like, I run outside no matter what, but even I have a cutoff of, like, if I look at my weather app and it's like 0 degrees out, I'm like, maybe today's not the day. Maybe I can find another day to squeeze a run in. So yeah, I think I agree with that. And also, I'm sort of mean to our photographers when it's really cold and snowy. Sometimes I'll text them while they're out on the field and just mention how chilly it is in the front row of the press box.
They love
those big windows. So those were the two big ones, Mary Kay. I don't know. Did you have a third to add for the Haslams?
Yeah, I have one to add. There are a few more that I have on here, but one of the ones that I have on there is, if it hasn't happened by then, will you be giving extensions to Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski? I sort of thought it would have happened by now. Kind of glad that it hasn't happened by now, because I don't have a story written for that yet. And there are so many times when I will be laying in bed and thinking, maybe I'll just give this one to Dan, because I don't have anything written yet. I'm like, nah, you got to write that. You got to write that one. So I have got to get my act together on that. But I do think that's a good question. Are you going to extend Andrew and Kevin? I think we know it's coming. Why hasn't it happened yet? And when will it be happening?
Yeah, well, it's funny. As you said that, I got an alert on my phone and I wasn't really, I just heard the buzz and I'm like, oh, this is probably it. But no, it's just, it's just a calendar alert that is irrelevant. Okay. So yeah, good news there. I mean, look, it seemed like it was inevitable. I still think it is inevitable, but why hasn't it happened yet? I don't know. So I think that's I think we've hit all three, Ashley. I think that's the other big one. And I had kind of forgotten about that one, but yeah, that's something that's on the to-do list, or it should be.
Yeah. Because, like we've been saying, it's something I think that we all still expect to happen. And the fact that it hasn't happened yet, it's fair game to ask why and when it might happen. And at the very least, you know, assuming that it is still a sure thing, it's their chance to offer some explanation or reassurance, at least, that things are still headed that way. But it is the other, those are the big three topics, I think, to hit with them that we've covered.
All right, there we go. We have sent Mary Kay off to Orlando with her questions to ask Kevin Stefanski, Andrew Barry, and Dee and Jimmy Haslam next week. This is not our last pod, though, before Mary Kay heads to Orlando. We will do a Hey MK pod tomorrow. So if you want to get involved in that, those questions come from our texters. Cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page is where you can get info on how to become a football insider and also become one of our text subscribers. You can find us on Instagram at Orange and Brown Talk, on YouTube at Cleveland Browns on cleveland.com. I'm sure Mary Kay will be putting up some shorts from the owners' meetings and things like that. And also, I think that's everything. Subscribe to the podcast you're listening to on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and leave us 5-star reviews. For Mary Kay and Ashley, I'm Dan. Thanks for listening, everybody.